This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded September 28th, and tonight we are talking to Nick Molnar and Anthony. I just know you as Anthony VDH Vanderhorn, right?
Yeah, that's what a lot of people know me as. So the correct pronunciation there is Vanderhorn.
Okay.
So there you go.
Great. So we're talking to Nick and Anthony tonight about the Glimpse Project. And you guys have been on some podcasts and you've been on C4MVC lately, so we'll be talking at a high level, but we want to kind of go a little bit, you know, in depth and talk about the nitty-gritty internals and all that stuff. So can we start with introducing yourselves? Let's go traditional and we'll go in alphabetical order. So we'll start with Anthony.
As I said, my name's Anthony Vanderhorn. Originally, I'm from Brisbane, Australia, currently living in New York City. And I work for a company called Infusion Development. And I'm one of the co-founders of Glimpse. Specialize in, JavaScript, client-side rich applications, stuff like that. So that's me.
And my story, this is Nick, Nick Molnar. My story is similar to Anthony's. I live in New York City. I also work for Infusion Development as an architect for them. I've born and raised in the U.S., down in Florida most of my time, and been doing web development for about 15 years now, and so co-founded Glimpse, and we've had an interesting ride over the last 6 months with that.
So you guys are co-workers at Infusion. Did this kind of bubble up from something in your work where you said, I wish we were able to do this in our projects?
A little bit. So Anthony and I get to do a lot of the web development for Infusion, and I actually get to do a lot of training of our developers, especially around MVC as those projects kind of pop up. So what we ended up seeing was developers who just didn't quite understand routing or binding in particular, and we wanted to provide them ways to kind of get through the debugging themselves instead of calling us to help them out. And, you know, a lot of our clients' developers have the exact same problems. So, you know, we had this idea for Glimpse, and we started working on it and put it together.
Cool. So I first met you guys at the Open Source Fest at Mix 11, and what you showed me, my first reaction to this was like, this was something I want, and I'm sure a lot of developers have been like, I wish someday I could do this, but I'd actually started writing like, a system using helpers, and it was writing some basic debug in a collapsible panel at the bottom. What you're doing goes way beyond that. So you said this is something where it gives you information about what's going on and kind of hinted with, you know, routing and that kind of stuff. Can you describe, you know, at a high level what Glimpse does and how, you know, why I'd use it?
Yeah. So essentially the way that I like to think about Glimpse as, if just speaking generically, is a platform for displaying information from your server. Okay. And usually it's contextual information. You know, so one of the key phrases we've kind of said is, you know, what Glimpse is for your server, what Firebug is for the client. And so if you think about, you know, what Firebug tells you about your HTML and your JavaScript and what's going on the client side of your application, Glimpse does exactly the same except for the server. And out of the box, we just happen to ship, you know, several plugins that we think are useful. But at its core, really, we've provided server-side infrastructure for people to write plugins that expose data. And then we have a client-side plugin, I guess you could say, which understands data structures and knows how to render those. And that's it in its simplest form.
Okay, so my experience as a developer, I'm sitting here, I'm working on my application. I wish I knew more about what was going on in it. I go into NuGet, I grab the Glimpse package, and then when I run my app, I browse to glimpse.axd, and then I've got this beautiful looking page with three buttons on it that says, you know, turn Glimpse on or whatever. And then once I do that, I get a little icon in the bottom right of my screen. And when I click on that, it pops up with a whole kind of, like you're saying, it looks like Firebug, but it's giving me all my server side information as opposed to client side. Is that a pretty good description?
Exactly. And the idea being that it's pretty dead simple to write plugins. You know, so it could be routing information that you're seeing, if it's an MVC application or if it's a web forms application, it could be something completely different. Or even if it was something particular to WCF. If you had a WCF plugin in the system, it would show you WCF information relevant to the request that was just made to generate this page.
And, you know, to kind of go deeper with that, one of the first things I saw when looking at the, you've got some sample applications that extend, like, for instance, the MVC Music Store for the MVC application. And but this is cool because you've got, like, I can go in and I can see there's a SQL tab. And so I can actually see the SQL code that's being executed there. So, I mean, the first thought I was thinking was like, okay, neat. I can see some routing information that's a little more clean than, you know, route debugger or stuff. But there's a huge amount of information that I can get at.
Yeah, one of the things that we really tried to focus on is, you know, at Mix when you saw it, we were just kind of trying to get some data out to show off what the platform can do. And then since then, we've really been focusing on what developers seem to have trouble with and providing that information for them. So, you know, routing and binding, we've already talked about. SQL, we had wanted in there since day one. We had a little trouble kind of hooking into that. It took us a little while to figure that out. So now we have SQL. There's a new tab that shows a timeline. It shows a Gantt chart, very similar to what you might see on the net panel in Firebug, that shows everything that's happening during the lifetime of your request. And what's interesting with Glimpse and that data is we know that we can't possibly provide everything that anybody would ever want, right? There's all sorts of other web frameworks out there, like WebForms MVP and Nancy and FUBU. And so what we've done is built an extensibility model on top of MEF, so you can very simply implement an interface, drop that DLL into your bin, and all of a sudden there'll be a new tab in Glimpse. And so if you do a search on NuGet for Glimpse, you'll find about 15 third-party packages that will add additional tabs into Glimpse for things like OpenID or OAuth, and Hibernate, Fluent Security, Alma. So we're pretty excited to see the community come around and provide even more information whenever it's relevant to your project.
And then in my application code, I assume there's interfaces that I can, you know, hook into to put custom, you know, whatever is specific for my application and emit stuff into Glimpse as well.
Yeah, exactly. So you could leverage that exact same interface. It's interesting. One of the founding principles of Glimpse that Anthony and I have always kind of strived for from an architectural standpoint is we don't want you to change anything in your application to use Glimpse. You'll change your web config, and that should be just about it. That will get you 99% of the functionality. So for example, we have a trace tab that seemed to be fairly popular with our users. And you can just use system.diagnostics.trace to trace out information. No dependency on Glimpse from your code. And then we actually have a static class that you can use to do a little bit more advanced stuff, but it's not required. So you unless you're making your own plugin because you want to add an app-specific tab, you probably won't ever reference any of our code from your code.
Yeah, and just to add on top of that, because we are leveraging, you know, system trace there, if you configure any of your logging frameworks like Nlog or Log4Net to output to trace instead of to, you know, a log file or as well as, all of a sudden you're going to get all of the logging infrastructure that you already have in place outputting to Glimpse, and it's going to be all the logging stuff that's contextually relevant for the requests that you just made. So it's much easier than trying to, you know, wade through log files, trying to figure out, you know, what log entries were, you know, relevant for this request that was just made and trying to isolate that from other requests.
So as I'm looking at this, if I was going to build my own plugin, what I normally do is look and see if there's already one that I can kind of base something off of. And as I'm looking at glimpse.mvc3, you've got a plugin folder and you've got several plugins there, and they're all using this Glimpse plugin attribute. And then they're just kind of implementing iGlimpse plugin. Is that the same thing I do if I want to build my own plugin? Is I just kind of follow along that same framework?
Yep, you're exactly right. So the iGlimpse plugin interface requires you to implement a string property called name, and that will be the name of your tab. And then there's the get data method, in which we provide you an HTTP context space, and you give me back an object. and that object will eventually be serialized, and we can talk about how we do our serialization and the Glimpse protocol and display it on the client. But it is as simple as that. You do need to put the attribute on your class, and your class does need to be public. That attribute is what Meph is looking for under the covers to pull the plugin into the framework.
Okay, so you mentioned that the wiring up, the only kind of configuration I need to do is in webconfig, and I believe the NuGet package adds that for me, right?
Correct. Yeah, NuGet is wonderful. We also put the binaries up on CodePlex for people who couldn't use NuGet for whatever reason. We had some requests for that, and then we had to write the documentation page for entering in, you know, the five different configurations that you have to put into webconfig.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the bottom we said, seriously, you know, just go use NuGet. It makes it so much easier.
Right.
Okay. See, and it's interesting from, you know, when we originally had our first implementation, you didn't even actually need to change anything really in your webconfig either. But we ran into a lot of really interesting edge cases when trying to support web forms and, you know, other various scenarios. Where out of the box, they, you know, don't like, you know, dynamically registering handlers and stuff like that. And so it's really interesting when you're trying to create something that supports, you know, multiple frameworks, you know, multiple platforms, even within the .NET space, and trying to get something that works consistently and trying to get a consistent implementation experience. Because we found that, you know, with, let's say, web config-less, you know, setups, it even came down to which service packs you had installed, you know, on your servers. And, you know, we started building up these really complex matrix of, you know, which servers were supported and which service packs and all this sort of stuff. And so that's why, in the end, we decided to go with having to change your web config, because, you know, anything else would start requiring developers to have to change their code. And that is really something that we've, you know, tried to stay away from. And maybe in the future, you know, we'll support, you know, two models, you know, one in the web config and one auto wire up. But for simplicity, you know, we've tried to, you know, stick with the web config. It's a well-established way of registering handlers. And so far, we haven't had any complaints since we shifted to that model.
Okay. And then as I'm looking at my web config, there's not much there. Like you're saying, there's a module and a handler. So the module is what runs on every request and grabs all the information. And then the handler is the glimpse.axd, which is what I use to turn Glimpse on and off pretty much, right?
Yeah, correct. So it's really interesting. You know, when you talk about lightweight frameworks and, you know, what's a burden in terms of execution within your system, in terms of third-party plugins and stuff, I'm pretty proud with the architecture that we've been able to come up with, and Nick's done a lot of the implementation on the back end there. But, you know, if you have Glimpse turned off in your web config, there's virtually no overhead to your system, you know, in terms of having Glimpse there. It's there, but it's turned off. You know, what happens is, yes, every request, there is, you know, at one line of code that would be run to say, is Glimpse turned on? But as soon as that one if statement's run, you know, it says, no, it's not going to run. So it drops out. And so, you know, from that perspective, when it's turned off, there's no overhead. Then, you know, if you're in the case where you do have Glimpse turned on, because you're wanting to pick up the additional information that Glimpse has to offer for whatever plugins you've got turned on, unless you have a cookie present in the request that goes through, Glimpse asks the second question, because the first question is Glimpse turned on the server? Second question, is it turned on for this request? And if it's not turned on for this request, then there's nothing that we, you know, add to the request pipeline or anything like that to have Glimpse present. And even then, you know, if you've got plugins disabled and stuff like that, you know, only the plugins that you've got registered will actually execute. So it's pretty lightweight.
So if you want to get more information about what's going on your server, there's been a few that have been around for a while, like you mentioned, things like Nlog, or there's also Elma error logging with modules and handlers. And then there's also like, I've seen lately, like the Stack Overflow guys have released the MVC Mini Profiler. And I see all these as kind of doing different things, but Can you clarify kind of how they all fit together, and, you know, are they competitors, or are they doing different jobs, or how does this all work?
So Glimpse is interesting and kind of really fits in with those other tools. Each one of them kind of has its own set of pros and cons and things that it's really good at. So, you know, like Mini Profiler is obviously very focused on performance and not necessarily so much to help you with debugging or diagnostics. So we have a little bit of overlap there, particularly in some of the stuff that we have in our alpha MyGet feed around SQL and showing timing and the queries that were generated on a per request basis. But then if you look at some of like the logging frameworks or something like Elma, those are interesting because they run over a long time. You might not necessarily care about the information at that moment that it collected, but, you know, at the end of the day, you might want to look and see how many errors you had pop up in Elma, or you might check your logs once a week or something like that. Glimpse is really focused on very specific per request diagnostics or per session diagnostics. So there's actually a tab that hasn't got a lot of press from us just because we've been so busy with other things, but we have the remote tab. And what that allows you to do is actually kind of attach to somebody else's session or a session from like a mobile device or something like that and watch what that user is doing and see what's happening on the server side. So, you know, kind of if we look down the future of where we could see Glimpse going one day, you would see that a user would call you and say that they're having problems with your website. And so you would send them to some page that would set a cookie so you could, you know, name their session or track it and see it in Glimpse. And then you can kind of see what's happening on the server side for that user with all of their data running through your view models or anything like that Glimpse would show you. So that way you can track down that problem from a back-end point of view instead of watching their screen from a front-end point of view.
I thought that was really cool. And that's kind of a parallel in a different way to when we were talking to Eric Lawrence about Fiddler, and he was saying that, you know, you can do on the local end, if you want to debug an app that's running, you know, on iPhone or Android or, you know, on another, you know, on a Mac or whatever, and you want to debug it, that you can set up a proxy. So you're kind of doing the same sort of thing on the server end. I mean, well, you're not doing a proxy, obviously, but you're accomplishing the same sort of thing. You're allowing me to debug somebody else's session, and I can watch what's happening.
Yeah, I like kind of that analogy that you brought up with Fiddler, because a lot of people do ask us about that, particularly because we have like a request tab that shows the parameters that came in. And I kind of feel like, you know, Firebug or whatever F12 tool plus Fiddler plus Glimpse is the trifecta of development tools, right? Because you have your client side and Firebug, you have the wire and Fiddler, and you have the server and Glimpse. And so you can literally see that request information, for example, that one tab, in all three of those tools. But one shows you the data as it was sent, one shows you the data from a man in the middle perspective, and one shows you the data as it was received. So if there was some upstream proxy or something like that between your user and your server, you would actually be able to see that things were changed. So getting that viewpoint kind of from the top looking down is something that I kind of feel like was missing or difficult to get in the past.
Yeah, that's funny. As I was kind of digging in and trying to, you know, snoop around with how everything was working, I was, you know, popping into, you know, developer tools and Firebug and then Fiddler. And it's true. You get kind of like you got to remember like, okay, where am I now? You know, but it's amazing. You can see absolutely everything that's happening everywhere. So you started talking about remote. How do I go about setting this up? I call you and I say, I can't, you know, I'm having trouble with your site. You guys stink, you know, and then how do you talk me, you know, what do I do?
Yeah, so I can answer that one. It's not there right at this moment. So it'll probably be there in not the next version, but the version after. But that you can actually turn Glimpse on in a write only mode. So at the moment, if that person called you up and said, hey, look, I'm having trouble, they too would get the Glimpse icon and they would be able to open it up and actually, you know, see the information as well, which you may or may not care about. But in the future, what they would be able to do is, let's say you'd have a help, you know, bookmarklet or link that they could click on in their site, and it would actually set a cookie, and the setting of that cookie would turn it on in a write-only capacity and tell the server, don't, you know, send any of the glimpse information down with that request that they've just made or they're making or whatever else, but keep a copy of it on the server so that other people can get access to it like yourself. And so once that happens, you might have logic to say what their session name is stored as. So you mentioned the glimpse.axd configuration page. One of the three buttons is actually gives you the ability to set your session name. So, you know, it's not a huge leap in thought to think that, well, when that person clicks that help button, it might set their username as the session name. If you do it through the glimpse.axd page, it just lets you set it as whatever. But in this scenario, it would probably be the user's name. Then you could be on any page on your website, have the glimpse panel open at the remote tab. And as soon as they start navigating around, after they've turned glimpse on in that write-only capacity, you would see their username pop up in the right side panel. And then you'd be able to click on their, you know, show details. And then you'd start to see their requests flowing in real time. So as they're actually navigating around, in the background, we're doing AJAX requests to actually pull from the server, you know, their glimpse request data, and then you can actually start viewing that information.
Okay. So, and you're, you know, as we're talking about restricting rights and all that, how can I run this in production without worrying about, you know, my users getting in at this information? How do I restrict it? And can I trust that I'm the only one that's seeing the information?
Yeah, so there's a couple of ways of doing it. In this scenario that I was talking about, one, it would be in a write-only capacity that people would be, you know, people besides developers would be logging information. But let's just speaking more generically, let's say you did have it turned on in a production scenario and people knew that you did and tried to go to glimpse.axd. So there's a couple of ways we protect against that. But at its core, we actually have an authentication pipeline that actually authenticates requests for glimpse information and glimpse assets as they come in. So what happens at that point is we execute a series of registered providers, which is just the same way we use MEF to pick up, you know, any plugins. So if you want to write custom authentication stuff that we haven't shipped with or haven't accounted for, that's fine. But out of the box, we check what your IP is against a white list of, you know, allowed IPs. We also check, you know, that you've got the cookie present. You can also use out-of-the-box ASP.NET authentication to lock down the glimpse.axd page to certain security groups or, you know, users and whatever else. So because we are using those existing, you know, we leveraging existing out-of-the-box ASP.NET framework stuff, you know, that kind of makes that possible. So does that kind of make sense?
Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. So, you know, we've been talking kind of about how everything works. We had a question from Twitter from Daniel Auger, and he was wondering what is the most difficult metric to tap into? And I was kind of wondering, too, as I'm looking at this, you know, the framework that you've built is amazing and could display, like you're saying, pretty much any kind of information, could be showing PHP or could be showing, you know, whatever. But you guys did have to dig into a lot of kind of complex information, like you're saying SQL was difficult. So, I mean, I guess there's Daniel's question. And then, you know, do you want to talk more about just kind of how you got at the information and what was tricky there?
Sure. So, yeah, SQL for sure has been the hardest information for us to tap into, mostly because, you know, most of ADO.NET was written before Microsoft was as open as they are now, and think about, you know, layers of abstraction and testability. We had a prototype running around mixed time frame for SQL, but it required you to use a special object context, and we felt that was really dirty to impose on our users, so we threw it away. And took quite a long time to put together something that would work with EF and configuration only. Only for the EF team to make a change that broke everything. So if you're using the EF 4.2 CTPs, Glimpse actually won't work with that. But besides SQL, the thing that we probably had the biggest challenge with was the model binding information. Because model binding actually has quite a lot of moving pieces between the value providers, the value provider factories, and the model binders themselves. And there's a lot of information and a lot of kind of, you know, let me try this value provider. No, that doesn't work. Let me try that value provider. No, this doesn't work. Going back and forth just to make model binding happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so tapping into all of that information and finding the right way to present it was actually quite challenging. We thought that we had found a bug in model binding because we had tapped in at, you know, so many of these pieces. And we actually talked to Brad Wilson and Levi over on the MVC team about, you know, what we had kind of run into. And we walked back and forth through the use case, and it turns out that it wasn't a bug, but it was still kind of a tricky situation to understand exactly the way that it was supposed to work and that it was working properly.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, you know, it's interesting. I remember hearing the FUBU MVC guys actually on here on Herding Code, and they were talking about, you know, I think it was one of the motivations they had behind creating FUBU MVC was the fact that, you know, ASP.NET MVC or web forms just out of the box is so hard to diagnose and trace and stuff like that. And, you know, whilst I agree that it's, you know, if you could create your own framework and that was a motivation from word, you know, from the get-go, you know, you can certainly design anything to be easily traceable or, you know, diagnosable. And, you know, I think that, you know, the ASP.NET team's done a pretty good job with MVC, but, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that it was their first consideration out of the box. But what I can say is that, you know, with the extension points that, you know, they've created, you know, there hasn't been yet anything that we, any information that we wanted to go after and that we haven't been able to get, you know. Maybe occasionally a little bit of thinking outside of the box, but besides that, we've been able to get at pretty much everything that we've wanted. And presenting the information, you know, as Nick said, is one of the biggest, you know, challenges we have in just trying to make it understandable for someone who is new to the platform or, you know, is trying to get a grasp of, well, what is actually going on here? And a classic example of that is, let's say, the execution tab, where, you know, the execution pipeline for, you know, ASP.NET MVC is pretty dynamic with the various filters and, you know, partial renders and all sorts of different things that can happen. You know, it's quite hard to see, you know, at development time, let's say, exactly what, you know, predict what the execution pipeline is going to be there. And so, you know, Glimpse can really hone in there and actually show you, you know, well, what it actually was and being able to see, well, did that actually meet your expectations?
Can you dig into that in a little more detail? Because it makes sense to me looking at it. I've got executed methods and unexecuted methods, but can you describe a little bit more what you're talking about as far as, you know, what's executed and what's not? What are you showing me there on the execution tab?
Sure. The execution tab basically walks through the entire MVC pipeline where you have a chance to put in your code and walks through that. So in the executed methods, it's a combination of the four different types of action filters, right? So there's, see if I can do these all off the top of my head. There's authorization, exception, action result, authorization, exception. So it shows all of those filters along with your controller action methods, plural, because there could be child action methods, and then your action results, whether that be a view result or a content result or something like that. So essentially what that tab is showing you is in order how those things were executed. And that's actually kind of tricky for some developers, particularly because the order in which filters run change from MVC 2 to 3. So for example, you could put the attribute on a method. You could put the attribute on the top of the class. You can specify the order property that changes how they run. Authorization filters always run first. There's global filters, and you have to understand how those run in the pipeline. So, and there's more rules on top of figuring that out. So it's not the easiest thing ever to necessarily figure out. So we wanted to put together a way for you to see, okay, so everything that's not highlighted in yellow is a filter, right? That makes up a majority of the work that's happening on a request. So you see all of the filters. And then the first yellow line that you'll see on Glimpse is going to be your original controller's action method, and then any filters that comes after that. And then you should see the next yellow line being your action results execute method being called. And then, you know, you can get into more yellow lines if you're doing like a render child action or something like that, where we have another action method and another action result being executed all on the same HTTP request. And then at the bottom, what we usually have as collapse are the unexecuted methods. These are filters that you had plugged into your pipeline that for whatever reason did not get executed during that request. And so most of the time you'll find, like if you're looking at the sample that we ship in the source, most of the time you'll find that those are all exception filters. And, you know, there was no exception that happened when you requested on that page. So those filters didn't run. But you can see that MVC did actually see that they were registered properly and it did pick them up. It just didn't need to use them for that request. Does that make sense for you?
Yeah, it does. So I have two questions off of that. One is, you're showing elapsed time for any of these that are executed. How are you grabbing that? How are you getting execution time for all of these different actions?
Okay. So this kind of, let me take a step back and talk about how Glimpse kind of does its magic in general. So at app start, based on the plugins that you have installed and enabled, because you can disable them in the web config, we essentially either wrap using like a decorator pattern or proxy any of the main components of MVC. So this means the views, the view engine, the routes, the model binders, et cetera, et cetera. So we also do that with the controller's action invoker. There's an interface called the iAction invoker. And when we proxy that, the framework at some point asks that class for all of the filters that should get executed on the request. So since we're watching that collection of filters move from the action invoker into the framework, we can see when those filters are being executed, and we literally just put a stopwatch right before the call happens. The actual call, and then we stop the stopwatch after. And then we push all of that data as we're collecting it into the HTTP context. So that data will move with us from the very beginning of the request till the ending of the request. And if you look at the implementation of that Glimpse plugin, all we're really doing is pulling information that we had already stored into the HTTP context and then serializing it to send down to the client.
Thank you for explaining that. And that makes sense. And I was already thinking before, but now definitely after talking through this, this is a great way to kind of get an idea of what's going on actually inside of MVC. Like, you know, always in a lot of projects, a good idea is to look at the tests, but I think in seeing how you're extending and hooking into and proxying and wrapping everything, like you've had to figure out the internals, and by looking through your code, I can see a lot of information.
Yeah, I have the MV3 source sitting on my desktop, readily available at all times.
Yep. Okay, so now I've got the elapsed time, and I can see there's, you know, maybe a filter executing that I didn't even need, and I had no idea was taking so much time, or something that you pointed out was, you know, when you were talking about the different view engines, and, you know, that I'm only using Razor View, but as you showed on the C4MVC presentation, which highly recommend, you showed there that every view is first trying the WebForms view engine and then finding Razor, and so we can save some work by removing that WebForms view engine.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. I think it was when it was even at Mix 11, I think when Hanselman was doing one of his talks, while he was on stage, he called out Phil Hack and said, you know, why was that a default? You know, and it was pretty funny. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, by default, both the Razor view engines and the WebForms view engine are registered. And because we are seeing inside of MVC as we are, you know, we can see all of these calls being made and see the ins and outs that are going on and, you know, try and give that back to you. And so the idea here is, and we don't currently do this, but it's not too large a leap to think that, you know, well, what happens if we started doing analysis on, you know, this stuff and actually said, look, you know, you're never actually, as far as we can tell, using the WebForms view engine. Here's a recommendation. You can actually turn it off. And even though, you know, turning it off isn't going to get you, you know, 1,000 more requests or whatever per server, it's certainly, you know, stuff that doesn't need to run and can reduce complexity in terms of what's going on. And, you know, a lot of people don't know that each time it looks up a view, it's going to be checking the cache to see whether the result's been cached there or not. So it's a really interesting thought that, you know, for developers who don't realize that, hey, look, the Vue engine can actually do that. It can look up cached results. They can now go off and start researching and looking at, you know, well, what do I need to do to make that happen? So, yeah, it's pretty interesting data that we can start pulling out.
So I can look at times to execute, or going back to something that you mentioned earlier and I kind of glossed over, but this whole new timeline view, which shows the Gantt view. I mean, that's a pretty powerful way of seeing visually what's taking a lot of time, right?
Yeah, so this was really born out of the fact that from day one, like even from that Mix 11 release that we had, we pretty much have all the timing information someone could possibly want. We just really haven't had a really compelling way of displaying it. And we tossed back and forth. We could show it in a simple table. And, you know, obviously that's had success with like mini MVC and stuff like that. But we don't want people to have to change their code. And we've got all of this information. And it's like, well, how could we actually show it? And I think we drew some inspiration from, I think, the browsers and, you know, how they show timing information. And we thought, you know, well, why don't we put this into one of these timeline chart views? And, you know, after a few weekends hacking away, came up with the chart view that we'll be releasing, hopefully in the next release. And I would say 90% of it will get populated by default, you know, with all of the information that we have at our disposal, you know, and then the rest of it can be populated by specific events that you're interested in and whatever else. And one of the interesting things we've done here is, you know, for all of our plugins, they actually use a timeline infrastructure that's built into the platform now. So one of the things isn't just, you know, the timeline stuff isn't just the timeline plugin. We've actually put core infrastructure support for plugins and, you know, for your own app if you want, but it's targeted more towards plugins at first, to actually register, you know, timing events that they may be interested in. So let's say if SQL was a third party, you know, plugin, they could easily tap into this API, submit timing information to it, and then it would automatically show up in the Gantt chart. And one of the things we've also done at the same time is, you know, have the table view of the Gantt chart. So you can switch between views and whatever makes sense for what the way you're looking to view your world and view your data. And you can even do some cool filtering stuff that we've got on going on there and whatever else. So we're quite proud of that. And I think it will hopefully solve, you know, a problem visually, which I think a picture tells 1,000 words.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is great. Like I'm seeing in MVC music stores, I'm browsing through and I can see what, like, say I wanted to optimize this. I might have jumped to conclusions and tried to optimize data access, but I can see that my execute DB data reader is taking 6 milliseconds, you know, and really what I need to be looking at more is my store controller browse action is taking a while, you know, and also, some, you know, rendering, it's taken 436 milliseconds. I mean, I can immediately dig into things. One thing that I noticed too was like, it was on one page request, it was taking substantial amount of time to find the view. And maybe by, like you're saying, disabling other view engines, you know, it's not a huge amount of time, but if I can half my response time, then that's a good thing.
Yeah, and you know what you're seeing in the alpha there is a pretty first cut of the timing events, you know, like in the test scenarios where we're just piping it test data and stuff like that. You know, the timeline shows up pretty well. And for what we're seeing in the alpha so far, it was just a first rough cut of, you know, what events do we think people will care about? You know, for instance, at the moment, we're showing each, you know, an event for each lookup that, you know, the Vue engine might do or whatever else. But, you know, whether or not people care, you know, about all those various lookups and whatever else, you know, we'll go through a process of trying to refine that. And hopefully, you know, we'll get pretty good community feedback on what people are actually, you know, how much of a magnifier people want on that stuff. Even around the names of all of that stuff, we'll go through and ratify all of that based on feedback. And you know, so it's pretty cool. And our intent with this is that, you know, out of the box, without changing any of your code, you should have a pretty darn good picture of where performance is with your app and, you know, where any slow points may be or whatever else.
One of the things that I'm really excited about with a timeline is Glimpse is in a really unique position since we have all the server timeline information. That's great. We have half of the picture, but there's also, you know, front-end performance that we need to worry about. And because we're just JavaScript at the end of the day, we can tap into the new navigation timing APIs that are kind of part of the quote-unquote HTML5. Like Firefox 7 just came out yesterday, and now they support this as well as Chrome and IE9. So we could actually show both client-side timing concerns with server all in one timeline. And I don't know of any other product that actually does that.
So what's the overhead, or have you guys measured the overhead of enabling all this tracing on the application? And is there something where you could ever consider using this or, you know, pieces of this thing in a production setting?
So we personally haven't done timing, but let me tell you a funny little story. There's a very well-known startup that everybody on this call has used that's based here in New York City that we got to talking to, and they were looking at using Glimpse to start helping out with their website. And so we went out to dinner with some of the guys there, and we got to chatting, and you know, they went back and forth about whether or not they wanted to use Glimpse internally, and eventually or ultimately they decided that they would create their own version of this for their needs. They had very specific needs. They didn't need most of the functionality of Glimpse. And one of the things that they did as they were evaluating Glimpse was put it through its paces as far as performance. And we were actually quite shocked because Glimpse is still in beta. Performance isn't something that we've necessarily focused on too much at this point. But they said that it added 2 milliseconds overhead per request, which we were actually quite happy with. And so I'm sure we can probably squeeze quite a bit out of that since we haven't focused on performance.
Is that 2 milliseconds as it's executing, or 2 milliseconds like... I think what you were saying earlier is if I've disabled it in production or if it's not running for a user, then it's essentially 0 milliseconds, right? I mean, it's not happening.
Yeah, that was 2 milliseconds as it was executing with all of the plugins that we had at that time. So it was not the SQL plugin and that was not the timeline plugin. But when it's turned off, it's literally one if statement. So microseconds.
Okay.
Yeah, and we've had discussions at the moment. You know, I think there seems to be a bit of a perception out there in the community, and I guess once perception's set, it's pretty difficult to change. But, you know, that Glimpse isn't to be used in production and whatever else. And, you know, we've talked about this at length internally between myself and Nick. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, in a production scenario, if you only turn on the plugins that you're interested in, then assuming that, you know, you're not seeing any performance differences, which, you know, in the testing that we've done, you know, or that other people have done, there hasn't really been any overhead. As far as we're concerned, you know, it's good to go. And we've talked about how to try and change that perception and whatever else. And who knows, in the future, once we get a little bit more functionality in, you know, we may do something where, you know, we have a Glimpse production or something like that. But in reality, it's pretty good to go. And, you know, it would just come down to which plugins you want to use and what information you want to collect and just being sensible about it. And if there is something that you don't need, then you just turn it off. And so exactly how we'll, you know, try and attack that perception issue is something that we'll have to look at in the future. But, you know, for here and now, for anyone who's listening to this, who is wanting to evaluate into production and stuff like that, I, you know, we can't see any problems. You know, as long as you take the right steps, you're locking it down by IP or you're locking down the Glimpse AXD, you know, then you're not going to have any troubles from a security standpoint. In terms of performance, you know, the overheads will be negligible. You know, and even nothing for requests that, you know, aren't requesting any information there. So, yeah, that's I guess, where we're at. And if anyone's got any smart ideas how we can attack that perception issue, I'd be more than happy to hear it. But I think it was something that was set as a precedence up front that, you know, Glimpse was just a debugging tool and, you know, that's all it was good for. Whereas when you can see, you can imagine with this timeline stuff that we're getting, you know, the execution pipelines, weird problems you got in production or stuff that you're trying to chase down, it's going to be pretty cool, you know, and it's certainly something that I use in my sites and, you know, and all the feedback we've had from people is, you know, that it solves their problems that they're having and, you know, that they're really loving it. So, yeah, take it for what it's worth. You know, we've got to try and do something there.
You mentioned there that I can disable plugins if I don't want to use them. Is that a web config setting, or how do I go about disabling those plugins, like the default plugins?
Yeah, you can disable any one of the plugins that you want to in your web config. So all you need to do is add a child element called plugin blacklist, and then you can just add any plugin by putting in its namespace and class name. And if you look in the Glimpse sample that we have at that web config, we should have one blacklisted in there as an example.
Okay. Your samples are really good, by the way. I just, for anyone listening, you know, you grab the source off of GitHub, unzip it, run the application, and the MVC application is right there. It's got everything plugged in. You've enhanced the application to include some other good Ajax data and stuff like that. It's really slick.
Oh, John, you're just saying that because you wrote most of that code.
I don't want you to bash on it, you know.
Thanks for writing the music store for right. us.
So a few things that I hadn't asked about yet. One is validation. Can I see any like validation rules? Like if I'm submitting a form, can I find out what validation was happening?
Yeah, so one of the things we do at the moment, and this is funny, I think this is leading back to a question that you asked us at Mix. But just answering your immediate question, there's a metadata tab. And so when you submit a form, let's say, and it fails to validate for whatever reason against the server, if you look at the metadata tab, you'll see, you know, the various configuration settings that were set up for this model and whatever else. Out of the box at the moment, we don't really show any particular stuff with validation. It's certainly something we're interested in, particularly with what you were asking us at Mix, which you can ask the question again if you remember it. Do you remember it?
Oh, man. I think I was wondering about digging through all the validation properties on the form and just saying, well, what are the validation rules for this form?
Yeah, and so that brings up a really interesting point. I'm glad you asked that question. About, you know, creating client-side plugins. And one of the things that you can conceivably do is we do support client-side plugins. And, you know, in fact, the remote tab and the Ajax tab and the timeline are examples of the client-side plugin architecture. But you could actually plug into that, look through your forms and pull out, you know, the data dash attributes and actually build up, well, what is the validation for this model that's currently present on this page, and actually show those rules on the page. And it's a very interesting idea. It's one we've thought about. And, you know, it's interesting. Me and Nick are in a bit of a quandary between, you know, how much functionality we want to build into core versus how much functionality we want to provide through the plugin ecosystem. And usually core wins out, but, you know, something like the EF plugin, you know, I did the majority of the implementation for all of the EF stuff, but, you know, I just don't have me and myself, Nick and myself don't have time to give it the attention that it needs to add the support for EF 4.1, or the way we did the architecture for the EF stuff, you know, it'll also support in Hibernate when someone, you know, wants to write that, or Peter Poco or Massive or whatever else you want out there through the same infrastructure. We just don't have time with all the possibilities with what Core has to offer to maintain everything. So we've got a million ideas. We've got a backlog that we keep internally of all of the ideas, you know, and we've got some pretty crazy ideas about stuff that we think is pretty cool when we'll be able to get to it. And, you know, put it this way, like the timeline stuff is the tip of the iceberg of what's possible. So, yeah, it's just one of those things.
Okay. You mentioned a little bit about Ajax. Did we cover that enough? I mean, one thing that I thought was interesting about Ajax is that you're sending, for an Ajax request, you're still handling everything on the server and you're sending the information back as a header, right?
Yeah. So for Ajax requests, what happens is we can't. So for a normal request that, like, let's say a HTML request that's made, we actually see that it's a, you know, HTML request that was made to the server, and we embed some script tags at the bottom of your page, and that gets rendered down to the client. Unfortunately, for an Ajax call, you can't do the same thing. We can't just render any random stuff in the bottom of your AJAX response, because who knows, it could be a JSON result set, or it could be a HTML snippet or whatever else. So what we turn to is, when you're doing an AJAX request, you can actually look at the headers and pull out, you know, information from there. And so what we actually do is, in the header, we actually store the glimpse ID that was relevant for the request. And through some fancy stuff, or sort of fancy stuff we're doing on the client, we're able to observe all the AJAX requests that are being made through the browser, and actually then pick up, does it have a glimpse ID in the header? Because not all AJAX information would have glimpse data. So then what happened is, would then make a request back to the server for the glimpse data when you want to actually view it.
Yeah, so I think one additional piece that goes along with that is, you know, John, you had mentioned the glimpse.axd file that we have, and that file does serve as kind of the quote-unquote administrative interface for Glimpse, but it also is overloaded and acts as an endpoint. It's another extensibility point in Glimpse, but what we have on that endpoint by passing in some query params is the ability to kind of do a RESTful type architecture where we get the data from a previous request. So as Anthony said, we stick the request ID into the header, but then we can do a request later after the fact if you decide you want to look at that AJAX request, and then we pull down all the metadata that was associated with the previous request. That overload of the glimpse.axd is also how we serve up the JavaScript client files and any of the image sprites that we need, et cetera, et cetera. But what's really interesting with that is, since we're storing a history of the requests, we actually can foresee a future where we start looking at meta information. You know, over time, this SQL query has been slowing down. Over time, your view engines are taking longer, or they're getting quicker. There's all kinds of information that we could see how the system has changed over time from a diagnostics point of view.
Well, that actually led into my next question, or maybe answered my next question, which is there sort of a record replay kind of capability where I can flip this thing on, you know, record some stuff as it's happening, and then later on go back and look at the results of that recording?
Yeah, so there's two pieces to that. So the first piece is how we store the request data. And so that sits behind an abstraction layer that we call the metadata store. And right now we ship one implementation with Glimpse, which just stores that in application state. But the idea is, for example, you might throw that data into SQL or to a NoSQL database like Raven, if you're in a web farm. And so you can persist requests over time for as long as you'd like to. So then the replay capability comes in our remote tab, which it's interesting because there's really two use cases for it. There's remote, where you want to watch what somebody else is doing from a diagnostics standpoint. But then there's also history. And so if you start browsing around the site and you look at the remote tab, you will be able to see all of the requests that have come through in the past. And we store, I think, 25 by default requests. And so you can go back to the previous post. And that gets really handy in situations where you're doing a PRG, a post redirect get pattern. Because if you want to see the model binding information on the post, unfortunately, the browser redirects you so fast, you can't even stop to look at Glimpse. But you can go to the remote tab and see the history of all the requests and go back and inspect that post request that just happened 1 second earlier. And we actually are working on some UI to clean up that experience, particularly around the PRG pattern, and making it very easy for people to discover that. It's not very discoverable right now.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, I see that on the remote tab, and then I click launch, and I've got all this history here. That is neat.
Something that you'll notice, some little kind of UI clues that we're trying to give the user. In the top left-hand corner of Glimpse, right next to the icon, will always show you whatever URL the request was for the request that was made, and that's kind of the context of what you're inspecting. If you use the remote tab or the AJAX tab and kind of launch into a previous request, we'll actually change that information. So you'll see that you're inspecting an AJAX request, or you're inspecting an old request via the remote tab. It's kind of help give the user context of what they're looking at.
Yeah, and to add to that, you know, I'm actually working on the PRG stuff at the moment in front of me here. And what we'll do for it, because at the moment, as Nick said, the user experience to try and get access to that original post is to go to the remote tab, pull it up. It's not very, you know, not as functional as what we would like. So here, to give an example of what we're trying to do from a UX perspective, is where you actually see the address that you're actually accessing, that will, in a PRG scenario, that would actually turn into like a drop down, like a HTML drop down, and you just hover over the top and you'll actually be able to click on the, you know, the post version, and it would actually tell you, looking at the post, of this PRG that went on, and then you'd be able to go, and so you'd see, you know, the model binding that happened for that original post. Then you'd be able to go to the get, and to get a little bit more on what a PRG is, that's typically where you've submitted a form and you've then updated the data in your database or added a new record, and then you're doing a redirect to like a checkout page or something like that. And by default, because that's a totally new request, that redirect, Glimpse will show you just the Glimpse information for the redirect, not for all the database activity that went on with adding, you know, the new record or all the binding that happened to pull out the data from the form. And so that's why, you know, trying to deal with that sort of scenario, we feel is pretty important. So hopefully that the UX to improve that experience will make it into the next release.
Yep. And the goal of post redirect get, if you haven't already, if it wasn't already clear, is that so a user fills in a form, hits submit, and then things happen, their credit card gets charged, database things change, and then they hit F5. You don't want to resubmit the form again. So with post redirect get, it's just going to redisplay the final page, right?
Correct.
I'm glad you didn't say no, you got it totally wrong, because I would have shaken it. You know, we've talked about all this great server-side stuff, but you have some really cool client-side stuff going on. You've got, you know, you're emitting some script at the bottom, but you're doing this, you're building basically, you know, like Firebug, all in HTML and JavaScript. Your timeline looks really cool. Like, I had to go in and check and see if you're using GIFs and all that. And no, you're not. It's like really nice, clean HTML for that too. I guess I've got two questions. One is one of you like the HTML JavaScript ninja that does all this, or are you both doing this? And then two, can you talk a little bit about how it's implemented? If there's you know, tabs or you know, if you're using plugins for all this, or how this all works.
So we do tend to divide our time a little bit. That works from a practicality perspective of working on features and trying to get work done. And so the way we've typically split work previously is that I do all the client-side stuff. So anything that's written in JavaScript pretty much, you know, is done by myself. And the majority of the server-side stuff was done by Nick, with some exceptions where I've been able to help pitch in, and likewise where Nick's pitched in with to help with my stuff. To answer your second question, what's going on there? Yeah, it took a little while. But, you know, I think it comes out from the history around how we started. And just to cover, you know, some of the decisions that were made there. You know, I remember we've got a document in Google Docs somewhere where Nick and myself, you know, started brainstorming, you know, how we were going to actually do this. Because we had this concept of showing the server data, but the thing we fell to instantly was, well, let's build a Firebug plugin. And when we actually looked at the creating a Firebug plugin, it, at least to us, it didn't seem like a trivial exercise. I think there's a few ebooks that have been written about, you know, creating, you know, Firebug plugins. And so I remember saying to Nick one day, very early on, give me like half a day or something like this, and let me just see what I can do. And I said, look, because we always had the vision that Firebug would be like the premium experience, and then there would be a light JavaScript experience. And so I said, let me see what I can do with the light version, just in HTML and JavaScript, and, you know, I'll see what I can do. And fast forward a couple of months, and pretty much what we have is what we've got. And in its simplest form, I think the client-side stuff is just a fancy JSON renderer. And so it understands JSON structures, and based on the format that's sent down, it will generate different HTML. But I'm actually in the middle of doing a fairly big refactor of that stuff, just because, you know, we iterated pretty quickly on it, and, you know, it didn't have a really clear vision on where it was going to go to start off with, and we have a lot of lessons learned now. So yeah, it's pretty cool. So the new stuff coming, as I mentioned, is pretty exciting, you know, and yeah, it's looking good. Nick, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think it was very funny, and we've still continued the architecture to kind of follow along that there could be other clients, you know, like a rich client or something that sits on the desktop for viewing old requests or something like that. But the browsers have come so far with their JavaScript and CSS implementations that we can give a pretty darn good experience out of the box. But Glimpse is kind of funny because most web developers have problems getting cross-browser compatibility. We have that, but we also have cross-server and cross-web framework compatibility issues. So we tackled both of the nastiest problems all together.
Right. So we've gone through a lot on the server. We've talked through most of the UI. I would encourage anyone listening to just click through it because it's so quick to get this running and there's a lot here. One thing that we hadn't talked about is in this kind of top bar, we've got the Glimpse logo, we have the URL that I'm browsing to, and next to that, there's a switch servers thing, and it's got, for me, it says dev, QA, and prod. What does that do for me?
Yeah, so we realized we don't typically work on a website in a silo in its own environment. After a project is a little bit mature, you're going to have a production version of your site. You're going to have a UAT or a QA. You might have a local version. Who knows what your kind of situation is for how you eventually get to production. And so what we would always say to ourselves is somebody in our UAT environment would submit a bug and we'd say, huh, I thought that was working on dev. I thought that was working on my local box. And then so, you know, we'd have to go in and type out the URL and kind of navigate back to where we were now in a different environment, pull up Glimpse, compare Glimpse from the UAT environment to Glimpse from the local environment to see what was different. So what that switching dropdown that you're talking about does, John, is if you give us a little bit more configuration information in the web config, you can add an environment node to the Glimpse main configuration node. You can just add in a domain or an authority like localhost colon whatever port and name that, whatever environment name works for you. So in the sample that you're looking at, you see dev, QA, and prod. And so when you're looking at a particular environment and want to see how the system is reacting in on the same page in another environment, one click, you can move from UAT to dev or dev to prod and kind of compare notes in Glimpse really quickly and easily. And it's one of those features that we can only show and add into Glimpse if you add that configuration data into web config. But once it's there, it really makes moving through your environments a breeze.
Great. Okay. Well, I think we should probably wrap up pretty soon. First of all, is there anything else important in Glimpse that you'd want to talk about either that we've missed here or what's coming in the future?
The future is pretty bright. I do want to say that, you know, Glimpse is still in beta and we're working hard to push forward to a 1.0 release. One of the things that keeps me up at night every night is that Allende will come and read our code and start blogging about how horrible it is.
The whole development world is afraid of that. So
yeah, exactly. So, you know, as Anthony mentioned, we know that there's some things that we can do better. And so we're going through and we're cleaning up and refactoring. So keep an eye out for that. One of those refactorings is we're trying to abstract away from system.web a bit. Right now we have a hard dependency on that. And that would allow other web frameworks like the WCF web API that might be self-hosted or even hosted on IIS or Nancy or FUBU. If those guys wanted to, we're trying to provide them a mechanism to plug in and have Glimpse sitting on top of their web frameworks that sit on .NET but are not associated with ASP. And the only other thing that I would want to mention is, you know, we have a really great community. So you can go to our github.com/glimpse page, find out more information. We also have a developer list on Google Groups that you can find from our main website, getglimpse.com. Come in and join in on the fun. We'd love to have any contributions or ideas submitted for new features.
Yeah, and I just second that. You know, look, as I mentioned before, we have so much planned for stuff here that we just can't possibly get through it all. And so, you know, if there's anyone out there listening to this that has a real passion for, you know, SQL or wants to take, you know, a bit of ownership over MVC stuff or whatever it may be, reach out to us and let us know, you know, because we'll be more than happy to bring you on board, bring you up to speed and get things running. And as Nick said, we've had great contributors. We wouldn't be where we are today without them. And we really, really do appreciate all of their help. And, you know, as Nick said, the future is really bright. There's a few things that we can't talk about that are, you know, which will be coming around the future, which we're really, really excited about. And, you know, hopefully one of my thoughts is that maybe in the future, just like we have Glimpse MVC3 pack, you know, an Entity Framework pack, in Hibernate, Glimpse MVP pack, Nancy pack, whatever it may be, that NuGet really does provide a great way of providing an ecosystem where these things can just be added. And as Scott Hanselman kind of says every now and then, the puzzle piece is just fitting together. And so, yeah, please reach out to us if you've got any, if you'd like to contribute, and we'd love to bring you on board.
That seems like a great place to wrap up. Do you have anything coming up, either of you speaking anywhere, or anything you'd like to get attention for?
Definitely check out our C4 MVC video that we already did. We kind of did a 101 there. We plan on doing kind of a 2 or 301 where we actually dive into the extensibility points and show how to program against that. That should be coming up within the next month or so. But other than that, we're looking forward to spending some quiet time with our families for the holidays.
All right. Well, thanks a bunch. Any last questions, Kevin, Scott?
Nope.
Cool.
Okay.
Well, thank you guys. We appreciate you having us on the show.
All right.
Yeah, keep up the good work.
And you too. All right. That's all the time we have this week. Catch you next time on Herding Code.
Thanks.